Okay, it's now recording. So this is the Business Law and Tax Law Advising Panel, April the 12th, 2019. I'll leave the recording on mute at the time. And if you just speak normally, it will pick it up.
Fantastic. All right. So I thought we would first introduce ourselves. We have a small fraction of tax and business law here, but that way we don't overwhelm you. Many people. I'm Diane Ring, and I do tax, all sorts of tax, which I'll be talking about.
Hi, guys. My name is Natalia Schnitzer. I teach the Introductory Corporations course, employee benefits law, a seminar on corporate governance, and next year a seminar on fiduciary obligations and the law.
I'm Jim Rapetti, and I teach tax.
So what we're going to do, Professor Rapetti does have to leave for a tax class, so I thought we were going to do tax first, and then we'll turn to business, and then, you know, we're both going to, so we'll say some things, and then open it up to any questions that you might have. Just before we do, I just want to encourage you, if you haven't gotten this yet, or if you haven't seen it, it's just a way of planning your curriculum over either your 1L, your next four semesters, if you're a 2L, your remaining two semesters, and just mapping them out. It's just literally a mechanical worksheet. And that way you can sort of start to think about whether or not your plans actually work in the time you have left. And so that's not anything too exciting, but it turns out to be very practical. I can't tell you how many times people come and have visions of what they're going to accomplish. And like it would take 7 years of law school to get all of that in. And so it's really useful to just have that in mind. And if you just want to pass that around to... Hello. Professor Reed, do you want to introduce yourself?
Professor Reed? I'm Professor Reed.
Yes.
Tax.
That's all you have to say for now. So what we've done, have you all seen this? You're familiar with it? Okay. If you haven't, you will see it soon. And if you still haven't, just email me, and I will simply send you one to make sure you have it. And really, it is exactly what it says. How do I pick courses? How do I plan my next set of semesters at law school? And how do I begin to think about that? That's not really our topic today. We're focused on tax and business, but this is a backdrop to it. We'll be referring to it. And then I'm also happy to chat with any of you after about just sort of more general kinds of questions that you might have in terms of planning. So the sheet that we handed out is a great way to be thinking about a field and then how a field relates to courses. Because what you take are courses, but what you pursue ultimately is a career in a field. And this is some way to sort of link it. Now, on the back side, the short list are basically the tax courses that will be offered next year. And then notice tax research is offered in alternating years, so I put that down just so you have an eye on that. On the front side is how you might mix and match tax courses depending on what you saw as your potential field of practice, what you think you're interested in. Because, in fact, it really varies. And I think this is just, I'll say one word about this before we dive in. This is sort of true across any field. It may be obvious to you some courses you would take. If I'm interested in X, I would take these courses. But it may not be obvious to you that there's some other courses you should take as well. And so one of the things I encourage you to do as you sort of develop a sense of where you might be interested in taking your career is to talk to professors here who do work in that area and say to them, you know, I know I should take, you know, this and that, but are there other courses? Because it turns out a lot of times there are things that people who are in the field realize that's what you also need to know. It's just not obvious. And so that's a little bit also what drives this, but it's not unique to tax. And so I encourage you to have that approach and chat with people as you sort of have a better sense of what you might be interested in. I thought, especially because Professor Rapetti, I want to give you time to get out, would start with some of these and just talk a little bit about the headers of what kind of field it is and then why we have the courses there and how to think about that. So do you want to start up? Oh, we're done.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, the way to think about potential tax courses is the different areas to which the tax courses may apply. And we broke this out to focus on business tax law courses, charitable orgs, real estate, family law, estate planning, international business, and then tax law courses in general. And for those of you who are interested in business law, we highly recommend that you consider taking Tax 1 and Tax 2. That's a definite. You cannot practice business law without having those two basic courses. Then if you're particularly interested in mergers and acquisition work, you should strongly consider Tax 3, which is our advanced corporate tax course, and it deals primarily with tax-free acquisitions, which is sort of the bread and butter of how acquisitions are organized. And partnership tax is something that you might think about if you're going to be working with hedge funds, private equity funds, or venture capital funds, because they're all organized as entities that are taxable as partnerships. Real estate, we recommend Tax 1 and Partnership Tax, because if you want to work in the real estate area, if you're going to be working with developers, all real estate ventures are structured as partnerships or LLCs that are taxable as partnerships. So Tax 1 and Partnerships would be two courses that we would strongly recommend. Just skipping down a little bit further for international work, if you're interested in international transactional work, or maybe working with various types of governmental agencies or NGOs, then Tax 1 is a basic course, sort of sets the foundation for more advanced courses. Tax 2, our basic corporate tax course, and then international tax. We actually have a separate course that focuses on international tax. And with that, maybe anything you want to add, Diane?
Where did we leave off? My brain was
International. I did not cover. Why don't we go back to charitable orgs? We actually offer a number of courses in the charitable organization area, nonprofit organizations, law and philanthropy, Tax 1, and estate and gift tax. From a tax perspective, Tax 1 is, again, the foundational course. It deals, to some extent, with charitable deductions. And estate and gift tax, interestingly enough, is a very important course for charitable organizations, only because most charitable organizations are in desperate needs of funds. And one of the ways that they obtain funds is through helping people engage in estate planning, where large bequests are made to those organizations. So you'll find that a lot of people who do a fair amount of work with charitable organizations also tend to know a lot about estate planning and estate and gift taxation. So if you are interested in that area, that would be the panoply of courses that we would recommend. And maybe I'll stop here and see if you have anything else you want to cover.
Well, Shuyi, do you have things you want to say before I maybe dive in? No need, but any?
No. I mean, tax is an awesome field.
Yes.
I don't know if you're here because... Is everyone here because they like tax? Is that what's happening?
It's tax or business.
Tax or business? Yeah, if you're going to do business, you got to do tax. and, you know, you might not think you like tax, but, like, I don't know. It's a cool field.
It is. It is exciting. And, you know, so along those lines, I just thought I'd say a little bit more. If you jump down to the bottom where we just simply list the tax courses, like that would be sort of, if your guiding, illuminating light was all tax all the time, right? You just run through the list and your work is done. I mean, you've got a few prerequisites and for the law school and boom. But I just want to say a little bit about what they were, because often there's so many misconceptions about what the classes actually are. And I just think it's kind of helpful because, to us it's so obvious, but there's absolutely no reason. Okay. So tax one, it says individual income tax, but I want to emphasize all the principles you learn apply to all entities that will bear tax. So a corporation, what is income? What is a deduction? How to think about when you report things. Those are principles that go across all taxable entities, and we cover them in tax one. We call it individual because we tend to use human beings as our examples because we don't want to mix in concepts that are unnecessary. Students haven't had corporations yet. Adding in a corporation as the taxpayer, even if we were discussing the same exact questions as a human, it's just unnecessarily confusing for students who haven't had corporations. So everyone's had a human before, and they can picture it. And then there are a few things that humans do that corporations don't, like have children or marry. And the corporate version of that is like tax three, where you merge and separate and all that. But it really is, in some ways, so it's broader than it sounds. And that's why it's a prerequisite to everything, because all the foundational principles of an income tax system are there.
I had never thought of tax fee that way before.
Anyway, moving on. Yes, isn't that true? Don't you think? Yeah. And then tax two, as Professor Rapetti said, like you cannot. I would almost bar you from graduation into a corporate job if you did not take tax two. Because it is just the basics of what's special about corporations and shareholders. I mean, you know what an income tax is, you took tax one. But what are the special issues that arise between corporations and their shareholders? And if you're engaging in corporate law, corporate practice, it's just, it drives so much or it constrains. It's either driving what you're doing or it's constraining what you were hoping to do, and you want to understand it. It doesn't mean you'll be the tax advisor, but it means you'll be able to communicate with that person and be able to have a conversation. And one thing, they've heard me say this before, but I have been shocked from time to time when I have heard corporate lawyers in practice areas that's, you know, very exciting and interesting, but say, oh, but I don't do any tax. I don't want to talk to the tax lawyers. Like, why would you ever want to cut yourself off from being that vital person that's a link between, you know, doing the deal and these other really important areas? I mean, that's just, it makes no sense to think about it. You're not going to be the tax lawyer if you're not a tax lawyer. You're not going to sign off on the tax side, but you're going to be conversant. Estate and gift, we sort of heard about that. International tax, just to be clear, U.S. rules governing cross-border transactions. When our companies and humans go abroad, when foreign companies and foreign persons come into the U.S. and earn money, that's what international tax is. So it's U.S. law. That said, once you learn it, the same questions, principles, and problems that we talk about in international tax are those that all the other countries face and that shape what they're doing. And so this is how I would describe it. Once you finish taking international tax, you could go to and then name a country and start asking them intelligent questions about their international tax system, because you would know what to ask. You would know what's relevant. You would know the band of possibilities, right? It may not look just like ours, but you actually know what to say, what to ask. Whereas right now, I don't know. If I've plopped you down in country X with an international tax lawyer there, what would you ask them if you were trying to understand their system, right? And not so clear. Tax three, advanced corporate tax, right? So you had so much fun in tax one. You went to tax two, loving tax two, in either thinking about being, say, a tax lawyer or a corporate lawyer, particularly if you're thinking about deals and things like that, then you want to think about tax three. And what that picks up, the two big things are, as Professor Rapetti sort of said, taxable acquisitions, so buying tax and selling companies in ways that aren't tax-free. They're just like buying and selling stuff, but tax is relevant, or tax-free ways of merging and separating. And huge, right? It's not surprising that if you could do something tax-free, it really catches people's attention. But in addition to that, we hit a few other topics, depending on time, that I always describe as you're not going to learn them in the course. That could take a whole nother semester on each one. But you will at least know it exists. You'll sound intelligent. And if you have a project that in any way intersects with it, you can actually take sensible notes to then go figure it out. Because one of the hardest things, if you have no idea what someone is talking about, and they just start spewing, right? How do you even take notes? Because you can't even frame at all what they're saying. You don't even know where it fits. And so the idea would be to hit some of those big topics so you could at least, you know, have that much knowledge to sort of take in the question, take in the information, and then engage in your research. Tax policy, why don't you speak to tax policy? You did it this year.
Yeah, so tax policy is more theoretical course, right? And it's about, you can think about it as the law of government extractions, or possibly the law of public finance, right? Which is, as who was it that famously said, plucking the feathers from the goose with the least amount of hissing, right? And so that seminar usually fulfills the upper class writing requirement. So if you're interested in tax law and also need to fulfill a requirement, it's always a good one to take. I don't know how y'all teach. When I teach it, I sort of do sort of very some standard things, such as, you know, what to tax. We call that the tax base. How to design a sort of fair and equitable tax system that doesn't have too much efficiency losses in it. Sort of classics of sort of public finance. Also take the opportunity to look at some stuff. I think what we see in our contemporary times is that often you see a lot of social welfare benefits delivered to the tax code, right? So sort of like a Affordable Care Act is very sort of intertwined with the Internal Revenue Code, right? And so I always do a unit on healthcare. Tend to do a unit on retirement savings because a lot of those incentives are all done through the tax code, right? We want people to save, but we give you a tax incentive instead of, you know, mandating that you save, right? And so then, you know, there's all these important questions of how to use the tax system to get people to do what you want. So that's tax policy. I might be overly underemphasizing the traditional parts.
No, it's all sorts of interesting topics. It varies. Professor Rapetti is now going to actually do the work of teaching tax. We'll see him later.
Nice to see you all.
So just the last two I'll mention. Tax law research that is taught by Marian Neary in the library. Truly fantastic. If you think you're going to be a tax lawyer, take it. You will be so much happier in 5 years if you do this. Like, how many things can you actually say that about? You'll genuinely be a happier person if you've taken it. And then the tax concentration seminar relates to something we didn't mention yet, which is we're introducing a tax concentration. For those of you who are one else, you might have heard about it at the meeting you had last week. Did they mention it?
They did.
Yeah. Dean Jones was the one, I think, who introduced it. So we're introducing a tax concentration, and what that means is if you decide to participate in the concentration, you take from a menu of courses up to a certain amount of credits and participate in some special things we're doing, and then you have that as a designation on your transcript. It's not extra semesters, not as extra money. You could drop it if you wished, so you could start down that path and drop it if you decided it wasn't. You can join it at any point, so long as you are able to meet the requirements that are remaining. So it could be you're taking classes, didn't plan on doing it, but realizing, oh, I've taken a number of them, why don't I do that? So the tax concentration seminar is a special seminar just for people who are doing the concentration. It works with the tax policy workshop that we run where we have outside speakers come. And so I'd be happy afterwards to talk with anyone who has any questions about that, just at least to have it in your head, but I won't spend more time on it right now. So what I thought I would do is take a few questions on tax and then turn it over to Professor Schnitzer to talk business.
In terms of first semester 2L, does it make sense to take tax alongside corporations?
I just fell short here massively. This is important, semesters. I was so excited about the content. I will just say that I think, you know, it's really useful to the extent. How many of you are 1Ls? Yeah. Okay. Courses that are sequential or have that much any sequentiality to them, the sooner you do it, the more flexibility you give yourself should you choose to pursue it. So I strongly encourage anybody who's thinking about tax or business or anywhere in that orbit because they're not quite sure. Sometimes they shift over one way or the other. Do that early because then it gives you the flexibility to take these additional courses and figure out exactly how you want to map who you are in your education. If you wait too long, it's harder to do the additional courses. And that's true kind of for both of them. So I would definitely, if you're the person who's I had this question with my advisees this morning. Should you take two big courses like that? Well, if they're of interest to you, absolutely. Because sometimes people hear you shouldn't take two or three big courses in one semester. And
not. How are you going to not? You only have four semesters.
Thank you. Yes. All right. I said, well, if you hate every one of them, yes, that probably will be a miserable semester. And I mean that. I mean,
but
if you literally
have problems in this life. If you hate all of your law school classes?
No, but I mean, if you hate corporations, tax one, and say securities regulation, let's just say that. That's a combo I often get. I mean, I suppose you could be interested in other things and not want to do that. I share your sentiment.
I think the best reason to take tax one and corporations in the same semester is it's much worse to take tax two and corporations in the same semester.
Yeah,
if you're taking tax two and you've already taken corporations, at least you have something to hang your hat on.
Yep.
Right? And then can I just say one other thing about tax two? For me, the biggest reason to take tax two isn't about the tax because you're going to forget the tax. It's that you can't understand something. Like, to understand something, like, you need to, in order to tax something, you have to understand the transaction.
Yes.
And sorry, no disrespect to all my business colleagues, but I find it's very easy to sit in that corporations class and be like, poison, shareholder.
That's pretty much how it goes.
fiduciary.
That's unnecessary.
You will have a chance to speak to that.
And then you show up in tax two, and then the person says, okay, who's taxable and what's the transaction? And you're like, oh, crap. Now I actually need to know what the structure looks like. Right? So it's almost like having to tax it makes you, it like forces you to understand the structure.
Yeah. Now, and I will say it's a huge, I mean, you really, it's even true in tax one. We talk about if you can't understand what they just did, how could you decide any question about when, how, and how much to tax? And so it really does sort of hone in on that. Yeah. I also do find a certain lovely elegance in tax too, but we'll put that aside for later.
That makes me one of us.
but back to the, so definitely tax and corporations, I would be really, I mean, anybody in this group who might be thinking of, if you're thinking really of business, you should also be doing tax one. And if you're thinking of tax one, you really should be thinking about corporations, and this is the great time to do it. So really, I just strongly think it. Plus, there's enough others, whether you're thinking of mergers and acquisitions, the deals course on that side, on the tax side, all the stuff we talked about, the marrying of them together. It really makes sense to get started. To the point of, you know, people saying it's too much, this is what I started to say, Professor Wee. I suppose if you really, really don't like any of them, maybe, but I have found that the people who usually come and ask me that want to do it. They want to, but then they feel I've been told it's a bad idea and they don't want to do something stupid when all these people told them not to do it. Like, I mean, isn't that just idiotic? You were warned and you still jumped off the cliff. Like, so, and they want me to tell them, no, there's actually, like, you know, a little pillow right there. Don't worry, you won't fall. And in fact, it is true. I mean, everyone who comes to me wants to do it, and then they're happy because those were the courses they liked. And sometimes there are people who maybe even weren't as engaged in the first year. Maybe the common law didn't speak to their soul. But this is what they're interested in. And so, like, yes, this is what they want to do. They're very happy. And then the other piece is if you have some bigger courses like that, your brain is spread across fewer topics. Many people like that. They just kind of want to focus on a couple of things rather than have 6 2-credit courses. Plus the 3-credit. You know, I mean, that's just like, they're like, oh, my God, my brain's like boom, 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 boom. Now, everybody's brain's different, right? You have to sort of know a little bit about yourself. But when you're hearing those things, it's really good to ask more people. You know, I encourage you to ask, not to just sort of let it go and either reject or accept, because there's always something in that statement to learn from and ask about yourself to get a better picture of what's a good semester for you, but I would dive in. Other questions?
Can I actually, sorry.
Yeah.
No, you can jump in if you want to.
Oh, no, I was just going to say something at registration, which is often that Tax One course in the fall fills up when you register. If you can't get in, know that it's sometimes like a buffet, like people will register and take too much food, right? And then they'll drop it over the summer. So. Yeah. What I've seen is often that wait list does clear.
I've never actually not been able to clear it, even in the semester when we only have one tax one in the fall, which is what I'll be doing this fall. So if you are interested and somehow you don't get it, first of all, make sure you email me, just so we know. Keep an eye over the summer, because sometimes people, a lot of times though, people don't drop until the first class or so. So it meant they may move. I do my very best to sort of, you know, strike fear. And create space for you all. But I would keep an eye, because some things do move over the summer. And then if not, always come to the first class, because you don't want to miss anything. And even if it's not quite an easy place to sit, let's just sort of see. Because as I said, I've never actually not, I mean, the true limit is the fire marshal limit. That's the one I can't exceed. But I've actually never hit it, sadly. Isn't that shocking, right? Never hit the fire marshal limit. But I imagine.
I was curious if there were any courses you wouldn't suggest taking together. So, like, say, Tax 1 and Trust and Estates. Can you take those two at the same time, or should you take Tax 1 before you take any other tax classes?
Perfectly fine.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Does TNE require Tax 1? No, right? Does it?
No.
Oh, they're all different?
Yeah.
Well, check the prerequisites.
I mean, you should always check, but my understanding is, because estate and gift is an entirely separate regime. It's not based on income at all. Trust and Estates is not a tax course. It's actually I would say like fiduciary trust and estates kind of, it's not, you know, about tax. Estate planning actually does have prerequisites, because I think it requires estate and gift tax and maybe trust and estates. You would want to check that, but I believe that that's still what they're doing. In terms of things maybe not together, you know, let me put it this way. I'm not sure I would do Tax 3, Partnership, and International in the same semester. Even I think that might not allow you to fully absorb each in its glory. You know? But I think most of the things.
Although I've had very capable students take two of
them. Oh, absolutely. Well, actually, I take it back, because Triple Tax Tuesday. So 2 years ago, a whole bunch of my students had 3 tax classes on Tuesday, and it was Tax 3, Partnership, and what was it? Was it International? So I take it back. They had a blast. So even that can be, you know what I mean? Because at that point, it was so much fun. Doesn't that sound like a blast? I mean, we don't offer Triple Tax Tuesday every year. That was sort of a bonanza. Other questions?
How does
the tax certificate compared to an LLM?
Right. So there's the concept of a tax certificate. It's not a certificate, so just as a matter of wording, that's sort of concentration, right? So a tax LLM, the tax concentration requires 17 credits in total from the menu, and some are fewer required, and then a few suggested, and then the remainder you get to choose. And we try to do it in a way that's pretty realistic, that both sort of meets what anybody, if you sort of told someone you would sort of concentrate in tax, they'd kind of think you should know. Mm-hmm. And then with some flexibility to both make it doable as well as hit different people's interests, because tax isn't all one. But an LLM, when we looked, what was the number we typically
LLM
saw?
LLM is, I mean, the most material difference is that LLM is one extra year of tuition.
Yeah, I mean, that the end zero. About...
Like 5 credits per semester. Right, so you're looking at 17 credits, which is like six classes,
yeah.
Right? And you're looking at, like, maybe 10 classes for an LLM.
Yeah.
Right, and so you do get more in the LLM.
Yeah.
My attitude is if you can get into a tax job without doing the LLM, you should do that because it's obviously cheaper, right? You go into the LLM if you desperately want a tax job and somehow could not get one out of the JD, right? Sometimes when you are in the tax job, the employer will pay for you to do a part-time LLM. That's also a great way to do it. I guess my attitude, which maybe is incredible, is you have sat on your butt for 3 years in law school. Sitting on your butt for the fourth year after the first 3 years is not going to help, right? All it is a credential, right? But if you do it while practicing, and someone else pays for it, then that's a good way to do it. So, I mean, I think one of the things we're doing with the tax concentration is we're trying to get people in the door so you don't have to, right? So that's, I don't know if that answered the question at all.
And just to follow up on that, so I exactly agree with that. And that is our goal to sort of, for those people who are really quite serious and active in tax and been taking a lot, if we can, make it clear to employers that what you've been doing and give a little bit more structure, have a few more pieces to it, that might make, to the extent that there are employers who are thinking, well, why don't I just pick an LLM that makes, our students competitive. Now, a lot of them are just competitive anyway, but the market continues to change, and we'd like to keep an eye on it, and we thought this was a useful option to sort of pursue. I will say that, some students do choose to do an LLM, and again, I think what Professor Reese said is right. If you've gotten the job you want, then there's really sort of no need to do it then and there. But if you didn't, or you came to tax really late and you didn't, or if you're the kind of person who feels, I don't want to go into practice without really knowing a lot more. Okay, and you're ready to do it that way, if that's what makes you, more comfortable in what you're doing. So I have people who are pursuing it, for a number of reasons. But this gives you a chance not to do it, and you can still do it if you decide to. It doesn't bar you, and we're hoping it kind of helps distinguish you in a way that's sort of meaningful and relevant. Because, BC has a pretty good reputation for having, a place without an LLM, having really good tax students come out. And so this is just a way to kind of capture that.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, if you're thinking, gosh, I like tax, I'll do an LLM. The job after the LLM is not a gimme. If you mess up your first semester grades in the LLM, it's going to be really hard to get the job you want, right? Because all the employers come right after, you go to NYU, right? There aren't that many good programs that you probably ought to go to if you're thinking of an extra year, right? So it's not risk-free. Right, so I guess my feeling is...
Dive in now,
do as well as you can in the tax and in law school, and if you can kind of get yourself into the door of the employer, whether it's an accounting firm or a law firm you want, and then segue your way into the group, once you're in, right? I mean, the primary inquiry in my mind in a tax field is, can you brain it, right? More than any other field. I feel like the inquiry in tax is either you can brain it or you cannot brain it, right? And everything else is a signal of whether you can brain it.
And just related to one last thing, and then Natalia, I know it's where did business go?
She's actually a tax person.
She is. That's why she's here with us. For those of you who may either now or in the future find yourselves thinking potentially about tax, even if you think you're not now, you think it's business, and then you take tax, you're like, tax was really fun. There are a lot of different ways in which the practice is done now, and a lot of different places to practice. So it's the kind of thing you want to talk to us about as well. It's not, if you've heard things about sort of what it used to be like or whatever, the world looks different. And so it's really good to talk to people who are just as it's moving along, what are the kinds of practice opportunities that are out there?
Okay. Professorship.
Well, tell us about the rest of the world.
Well, no, what I will say is that I tell my students they really have to take one, you know, of all the, you know, many, many classes that one could take care of, the one piece of advice that I give my students is that, you know, if you're interested in business, but really for anyone, you should take tax. You should take some tax while you're in law school. I don't know if you could tell. We have a very enthusiastic and awesome tax faculty who really, really, really love the subject. And so I'm totally on board with that. I'll just add a little bit. And my approach is sort of, if you are interested in business, the thinking is generally similar to what Professor Ring said, right? If you are interested in the business area generally, I would advise you to take corporations sooner rather than later. Now, corporations is a class that's typically offered twice every semester, so you have a lot of opportunities to take it, but I wouldn't wait too long, right? For why don't you want to wait? Well, there's a few reasons. One, I think it's helpful if you're interested in a practice area to early on learn kind of the lay of the land, the relevant terminology, right, kind of get a footing in the field. I think that's helpful, you know, as a signaling. If you are interested in sort of practicing in this area, you want to show potential employers that, yes, I'm making, you know, I'm trying to learn, right, what I need to learn. And then also, right, for the as in tax, there's, you know, not as many, but also there are quite a few classes in the business curriculum that have corporations as a prerequisite or sometimes as a co-requisite. You know, so for that reason, I think it's also helpful to take corporations early, you know, it may be, you know, fall or spring of your 2L year. It's also helpful because if you do end up going into some sort of summer job in the business field, and you, for example, have to, you know, express a preference of what you want to, you know, what sub area or subfield you want to do, you know, within business, they might give you like 10 different options, you know, private equity, M&A, you know, any other, you know, capital markets. You kind of want to know what in the world those terms mean, and the basic corporations course will sort of help you get there. I think once you've taken the corporations course, I think you may have a better sense of where your corporations and business law generally. There are a lot of sort of different specializations, different subfields. As you can see, again, this is a very helpful resource, and you can see all the different courses that BC offers broadly in that business law curriculum. And so I think it's sort of a question of what interests you most, what excites you. And I guess I'll just emphasize a couple of things. You know, courses like securities regulation, which is a very useful course to take, I think is generally offered once a year. You know, so that's another reason to get something like corporations out of the way earlier, so you have room in your schedule later for the class that's not offered, you know, every semester.
Is core a prerequisite for SecReg?
It's not.
It's not, okay.
I don't believe it is.
That's why I was saying, when I've heard the three that people ask, can I do these together, it's often tax one, corporations, and securities regulation fall the second year. People say, can I do that?
So you should, yeah, I think it's important to check, right, if there are particular classes. And then I'll emphasize that as in tax, the sort of business law faculty also offer upper-level writing courses. So there's every year there's a corporate governance seminar, right? So if you want to sort of dive deeply into a particular topic or issue and you want to write, you do some writing on it while you're in law school, you know, there are, you know, business law kind of seminars that I would highly recommend. And I think it's nice sort of to diversify your kind of course selection, both in terms of the subject area. I mean, if you want to do all tax, that's good. I totally get that. But I think, right, you want to have a little diversity, but also in the nature of the course, right? Like, you know, you have some large lecture courses, but you also, you know, have a seminar where you get to know a faculty member and get to do some writing and, you know, maybe a clinic. So variety in that sense as well, I think, can be nice and can make for a happier law school experience. And then, you know, the business curriculum has also been expanding to add things like, you know, the corporate counsel externship and sort of these kind of tethered opportunities. So you have a doctrinal course that's paired with some sort of practice-oriented opportunity. And the ones that we have tend to, again, have corporations as a prerequisite. So another reason to do that earlier. I think with business for those of you who want to practice in this field, I think sort of learning the terminology, understanding the structure of transactions, often driven by tax, it's true, is really helpful. So I would make a pitch, you know, for making sure you can sort of speak the language of business law. And in that sense, classes like accounting, tax, right, are very helpful. And I'd also make a pitch for, remembering that you can venture outside this campus, including to the business school, to take classes there. And if, you know, neither the law school nor the business school offers a class on something that is of particular interest to you, you can always do an independent study. And I think, you know, I encourage students to remember that as an option, that you can approach a faculty member and say, I really want to, you know, I'm like dying to learn about whatever. There's not a course on it per se, and I think most faculty members would be happy to do, you know, it's usually a one-credit course, but you sort of get to design a syllabus and sort of read the things you want to read and usually write a paper on that.
Can I interject something there? I've had students use that in two particular ways. One where they were trying to get into a field, like a little bit more of a subfield, and they wanted to really demonstrate their interest and commitment and also be kind of more conversant. So they chose to do an independent study paper on that issue within the bigger field, to kind of be able to really have that be a topic of conversation in a cover letter and conversations if they were doing sort of just meet and greets with people. So that's one way people used it that was more than just of interest, but strategic. And then the other strategic was the opposite, someone who already had a job and wanted to kind of connect. It was in a field, focused part of the field, and they wanted to kind of dive in beforehand, really kind of get a more sophisticated understanding. Also, they were connecting with the person they were going to be working with a bit over the semester just about the topic and had some, and so it was just a great way to sort of start to build that relationship, get a little bit more expertise in where they were going, and it was what they wanted to do. So, I mean, if they hadn't, that would be perfectly fine, but it's just different ways that students use that kind of possibility.
I think I'll stop there and take any questions that you guys may have.
You mentioned securities regulation. Is that the same as secured transactions? Or
excellent question.
No, it is not. And I would say both classes are extremely, extremely useful for if you're interested in business law.
Okay. Because you mentioned that people usually come to you asking about taking corporations, securities regulation, and tax one.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking of doing secured transactions, corporations, and tax one. And is it... when people combine those three, are those the only three classes they usually take, or do they add a fourth course as well?
Because usually what the target is more like 14, yeah, you need 15. Yeah, I was assuming like something like class. Like something else. I wasn't going to disparage the else, but like the anchor was those three, and then
something
else.
Okay.
Whatever that else struck you. You know, maybe.
SecReg is three credits, right? So that's only.
Oh, is it only three? No.
Is it three or four?
Corporation is three.
Corporations is three here.
Corporations has a core option too.
So certainly then you can take something else. And just as a reminder, it's great to be getting not only like sort of things like corporations or tax one in early so you can explore and build, but also your requirements. Because the last thing I was just telling my group before, the last thing you want to do is this. So I had someone who was had a job to be a tax person, right? That's what they wanted to do. They came in knowing it, they loved it, they want to do it, they had their job, and then the last semester, 3L year, so spring, was the advanced corporate tax 3, perfect for exactly what they're going to do. And then the student realized the student had not taken professional responsibility that clashed with tax 3. And yes, it was exactly, so they came to me and said, what do we do? Exactly, you know, you got to do it. You got to take professional responsibility. And we came up with a thing, it wasn't a perfect overlap, so they came to one day of tax 3 as an independent study. So it's another use for an independent study. It came one day, we did all the projects, did all the work. It was a lot of work, but they wanted the knowledge. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, this was for the future. This is like building what they're actually going to be doing. They want to know it. And so did an independent study for their presence there and then took, you know, the professional responsibility. But if you can plan around that, it's even better.
And by the way, to granularly answer your question, securities regulation is about public offering of securities. So if I'm Google and I want to go IPO, or like Uber and I want to IPO and I want to list myself on the securities exchange, right, it's all about disclosure, what you have to disclose, right, and how do you comply with those requirements, right?
And some fiduciary duties,
right. secure transactions is about creditors, right? So I want to finance, I want to loan you money, but I want a security interest in your collateral, like your Cantaloupe stock or your inventory of motor vehicles or your, you know, personal property. Secured is Article 9, so it's all property. I want to say mortgage, but that's not Article 9, it's personal property, right? So it's literally the law about how a rapacious secured creditor goes about, I'm kidding, right, but goes about perfecting and making a security interest in collateral. So it's totally different. One is if you are going into securities work, like you are going to be the person either litigating securities transactions, like when someone screws up their securities offering or like fraud or whatever, right? That's securities regulation. Secure transactions is if you're interested in financing, right? A corporation raises capital either using lending or using shares, right? Issuing stock or taking loans, right? And the secure transaction side is how the secured lender gets its interest in collateral.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Two totally different things, two totally different practice areas. Related, same corporation.
And just, I don't know if any of you listened to NPR yesterday in the afternoon, they were talking about the financial banking and related issues for the marijuana businesses. And one of the things they mentioned is it was hard to borrow money because the lenders couldn't really get, they didn't quite use the term secured interest, but, you know, couldn't get a comfortable latch onto your property because the government might seize it as illegal drugs. Now, the reality of that was deemed to be pretty unlikely in the marijuana context, but still, lenders were like, we can't just have the kind of interest we might normally attach on property for someone we're going to lend money to, and so we're more worried. So it's just an interesting spin.
And just one more thing. If you're thinking about the secured transaction side of things, you probably pair that with bankruptcy, because bankruptcy is after the secured lending goes terribly wrong and the debtor falls into distress.
Okay.
So that set is Article 9 and bankruptcy pair well together. And then securities regulation is if you're going into some, I don't know,
I mean, securities regulation is, of course, if you want to work in sort of a capital markets practice group. So, again, for companies that are trying to raise money by issuing equity to the public, right? And securities laws in the United States broadly aimed at ensuring the integrity of our public capital markets. And
that was much better than I said.
No.
It's all about disclosure.
I think it's just a helpful course to take because it's material that's it's doesn't make for the best bedtime reading if you were pick it up on your own.
Some things are good to learn in a classroom setting.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it.
It makes the life easier than trying to learn it later.
Is there a way to decode the difference between like the 3-credit offerings and the 4-credit offerings of the same courses? Like I think corporations is both 3 and 4. Is there an advantage?
I was going to say something about the generic, but you might want to speak to corporations.
I think it's most of the corporation's courses are 3 credits, and I think Professor Quinn is the only one that does the 4-credit option, and I think he basically adds some additional material where you can sort of pick. As I understand it, because he has, I think, an online component to it, and so you supplement sort of what you do in class with him, and then you can choose like an area of focus that you do primarily kind of on your own. So I think I would look at his syllabus more and check with him, but I think that's a distinguishing feature there. But as to the general distinction,
so I was just going to say because that also came up this morning. Generally. If they are there to meet a requirement, they meet it. That, for example, someone asked me about professional responsibility of 2 and 3, and does it meet the requirement? What's the difference? The difference is what the professor, how much they want to teach and what they want to cover. But if it's on the list, like say, that says this meets professional responsibility, this meets the perspectives course. It doesn't matter about the credit variability; it just meets it. And then within the more of these field-specific ones, you know, it's just slightly different coverage or an expansion, but I don't think a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Other questions?
So much to think about.
It is. It's very exciting this time of year.
Could I ask a question about tax again?
Oh,
so this is pertinent to me. But I'm planning to study abroad this spring of 2020. So
yeah.
I'm just curious. So are you expected to take courses in your interest each semester? Or would it be a way that I could...
Well, so that is... Exactly. I have to think about it, but that is exactly what this would help you do.
Okay.
Because, I mean that really literally, because that's a great question. The only way to really answer it in the most concrete, like how much does it limit me? I think is how I'd phrase it. Certainly you can do it. You know what I mean? So, as I said, people come to tax in their last semester, right? You can't get much worse than that. Yeah. I mean, that's as late as it can be, other than after graduation. So what I would do is I would fill this out and see what it's looking like, and then what adjustments you might want to try to make, or you know, come talk to me about you know what other possibilities you could do to sort of boost it or whatever you're trying to achieve. But that would be the first step. And I would really, especially if you're thinking about taking a semester and doing something like that, you really do want to kind of make sure you, because you can't even count on that piece. So it's a great experience, but you want to make sure the rest of it works for you in the way you are planning it will. All right. Well, if, as you digest, you have more questions, I'm just upstairs on the fifth floor with Professor Wee. Professor Schnitzer in the lovely East Wing. Can
tape this entire conversation?
Yes, indeed.
What? I know, but we'll close it off now.